This is Fresh Air. Before Carole King had hit records of her own, she wrote songs that became hits for other singers. Carole King and her first husband, lyricist Jerry Goffin, were one of the most successful songwriting teams of the 60s. Their other hits included Some Kind of Wonderful, Every Breath I Take, Take Good Care of My Baby, The Locomotion, Chains, Don't Say Nothing Bad, and I'm Into Something Good. In the late 60s, King stepped out from behind the scenes and started writing music and lyrics to perform herself.
So far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place? So fine to see your face at my door. Doesn't
That's from King's 1971 album Tapestry, which remained on the charts for 6 years and broke the record for best-selling album of all time. Carole King has a new recording called Color of Your Dreams, and she's currently on a 14-city summer tour. I spoke with her in 1989 after the release of her album City Streets. When Carole King first started writing professionally, she worked with Jerry Goffin at a New York publishing company owned by Don Kirshner. Kirshner is the rock producer who hosted late-night rock concerts on TV and produced The Monkees. I wondered if it was strange to be turning out songs in a cubicle in a Manhattan office building.
Didn't matter where we did it. It was just as easy to do it there as at home, sometimes easier because, we had the kids at home. But also, in the office building, just as often, we'd have one of the kids in the room, one of said kids being, of course, Louise Goffin, who has had 3 albums out on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So she got her training really early and on the spot.
So were there like a whole corridor of offices with pianos in them and songwriters laying out new tunes?
It's by now, it's probably fairly well known, the cubicle situation where we would be in one cubicle and say Man and Wild would be in another cubicle and some other team would be in the third cubicle and we'd hear each other trying to write the same song.
Were you given assignments?
Always.
Like, what would an assignment be like?
The Drifters are just coming off a top 10 hit and we want to get the next one. Donnie Kirshner was really motivated and motivating. He was kind of a daddy figure, I guess, and we really wanted to do it for Donnie. He just kept us motivated and playing off against each other, and it was really fun. It was very competitive, but it was also fun, and the challenge of writing for new people all the time really honed our skills at writing on assignment, doing demos quickly, professionally, and cheaply. Oh, God, cheaply.
Well, the demos are the records that you'd cut for a group who was going to be recording one of your songs, and the demo would show how it's supposed to sound, you know, the melody, the lyrics,
right,
and everything. What makes a good demo?
I don't know. It just has an energy. In many cases, the sounds were really primitive. The performances were flawed. There were scratchy notes on the vocal and wrong notes on the guitar and all that stuff. And tape hiss, because we kept bouncing. At that time, the demos were monaural, one track. That's all we had. And so we just bounced back and forth. So now some of the demos eventually became records because people were telling Kirshner that the demos were so good that he said, more money to be made. Why don't I put them out? So my demo for Bobby V of It Might As Well Rain Until September became my first solo record in that decade anyway. The others before that were not worth mentioning. And Locomotion by Little Eva was in fact a demo for Dee Dee Sharp. And it's funny, you hear it and you hear the drum thing in the beginning, the role, and before it, you hear this enormous amount of tape hiss from the bouncing back and forth from monaural to monaural. But, you know, I always liked the fact that they were raw and real, and if there were mistakes and tape hiss, it didn't matter because it was happening.
When you were working with other groups writing songs for them in the 60s, did you usually meet them, the singers and groups that you were writing for?
Not always, but generally, yeah, because we, even if we weren't involved in the production, we'd often go to the sessions. We did.
What would you do if you felt that a singer or a group wasn't putting your song over right?
I don't think it ever happened.
Really?
I imagine if it did, you know, not being shy about communicating my feelings about those kind of things, I probably found a way to let somebody know or make a suggestion. But I don't know. Usually they picked up the energy from the demo, and if anything, took it, you know, way farther. One of the great moments of my life as a songwriter was the first time that I heard Aretha Franklin's version of Natural Woman, which was in many ways not like the demo at all. It was amazing because this was the ultimate singer in the world to me. And she was singing my song, and she had taken what I did with it and did what I never dreamed could be done with it.
And so you were thrilled. Did you for a moment feel like it was no longer your song or something?
Oh, no, okay. Not at all. Uh-huh. It was my song taken to the nth power.
How did you feel recording that song after she did it?
I felt that, the idea of topping it didn't even cross my mind, but I felt that as the songwriter, I had sort of a claim on any version of it I wanted to do, and it would be okay because I wrote it. When I say I, Jerry Goffin also co-wrote that. But it wasn't even a problem in my mind. It was like two very separate things. Nobody could even approach how she sang it, so that wasn't even in my mind.
We're featuring a 1989 interview with Carole King. She has a new record, and we'll hear something from it a little later. First a break. This is Fresh Air. Carole King is my guest. I think your first really big hit, your first number one hit, was a song you wrote for the Shirelles, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. What were you keeping in mind when you wrote that song for them, one of the first girl groups?
Again, Jerry wrote that lyric. Jerry has written, being a man, he has written some of the best lyrics for women that exist, Natural Woman being one of them, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, another one, and one I didn't write with him, Saving All My Love for You by Whitney Houston. I think he was thinking, he did what I was talking about. He put himself in the mental persona of what it would be like to be a young girl, thinking, yeah, but will you respect me in the morning? And as far as the music went, I had in my mind their previous hit, which was Tonight's the Night, and we always kind of tried to incorporate some of the chordal feeling and the mood and the energy and just kind of write it backwards, upside down, and sideways, and the combination just worked. Also, I've had, when I was growing up, I listened to classical music a lot as well as Broadway. I had a real good background in all kinds of music, real good exposure, and so I think there's almost a classical feel to that melody and the arrangement with the cellos starting it off.
Mm-hmm. Were you expected to write in different styles for white and black performers?
Again, I don't know about expected, but one followed one's impulses, and if it was a black performer who had done something in a style that was R&B related, chances are what I would write would be related to what they had just done. But there were, you know, crossover type of records where we'd write something for a black artist and a white artist would wind up doing it, and vice versa.
I think, you know, in thinking about your body of songs from the 60s, the performer and songs that seem to fit in there the least is Steve Lawrence, songs like Go Away, Little Girl.
Well, you say fit in there the least. It just, we wrote for whoever was sort of thrown at us, and it just sort of shows that we were given a chance to demonstrate versatility, and I guess we had it because we had been exposed, Jerry and I both, to all kinds of music, you know, pop music and R&B and the baby rock and roll records that were just starting to happen in their R&B versions.
Was it a crisis for you when bands started writing their own songs? I know a lot of songwriters felt shut out in the post-Beatle years.
Yeah, I think that was a problem for us for a while. I think the bigger problem, because there were still people looking for material, but the biggest problem when Bob Dylan and the Beatles came along was not so much that they were self-contained, but that they were so good. They were so raw and so different from, we were a little more polished by that time, having had all our training and, you know, our types of exposure to Broadway and pop music, and these guys were like, you know, out there, raw. So it took us a while to figure out what it is they were doing.
And once you figured out what it is they were doing, did it change your songwriting?
Probably, but I couldn't to this day tell you how.
Mm-hmm. After you and Jerry Goffin broke up, you started writing lyrics to your own songs, and you also started performing. What was it that got you in front of the microphone on stage and in the recording studio?
I don't know. I do know that it seemed inevitable. I did a record called Now That Everything's Been Said with a group called The City, which consisted of Charlie Larkey, my bass player and also second husband, and Danny Korchmar, who is, you know, now a well-known guitar player and producer and writer in his own right. And they just kept egging me on, come on, you can do it. And we never did go on the road with The City. We had we used Jimmy Gordon as a drummer on the record, but we just never did go on the road. But then I met James Taylor and started playing as a backup musician for him. And so I'd find myself on a stage with him. And one night he said, well, why don't you, you know, do one of your songs? And I was terrified. He said, no, it'll be fine. And in the middle of his set, he introduced me to his audience as the woman that had written a lot of their favorite hits. And he was going to turn the stage over to me, and we were good friends and all. And the audience, who loved him, was sort of ready to receive me and pre-liked me. So it was like, well, okay, they're ready to like me. I guess I'll do this. And it just was real easy. I really learned from James that all you have to do is get out there and be yourself and do the song and, you know, it's okay. It's just the same as playing it for a few friends in a living room as it is for 20,000 people.
No, I would imagine that writing songs for so many years and seeing all these great groups and singers record them, that you'd get kind of envious and sometimes wish that it were you on that stage or selling all those records with your voice on it. You never felt envious of them?
I don't know if envious is the right word. Just at a certain point, writing the songs was the main thing. To write the song, to look at this thing and say, I did that, was great. And then getting on stage for me became less of a thing about glamour and glory, which I was actually more uncomfortable with than anything, the glamour and the glory. But it was the concept of, I guess I'm the best person to present my song, or I'm the only person to present my song at this time, or whatever. It just seemed like a way of presenting the song, but to me it was always about the song.
Well, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Carole King.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks, Terry.
Carole King in an interview recorded in 1989. She has a new album called Color of Your Dreams. It features the song she wrote for A League of Their Own, called Now and Forever. We'll hear King's song, Tears Falling Down on Me.
Vera comes home on Sunday morning after hanging with the boys all night. Laughing and drinking with them, thinking she's one of them, and that makes everything all right. She vaguely remembers going out in the parking lot with the stone mason's son, who had his way with her, then walked away when he was done. Sometimes she thinks about leaving, she tells herself someday. You know, her daddy said she'd never amount to much of anything anyway.
Carole King from her album Color of Your Dreams. This is Fresh Air.